The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Welcome back to Financial Focus Radio Show. Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management has offices in Bend, Eugene, and John Day, serving clients from all over the Northwest. Give us a call today for your free retirement review. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you want to take us up on one of those free retirement views and have at least $500,000 of investable assets, call our office to get it scheduled. The number here is 800-743-0988, or go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Just let us know you'd like a free retirement review, and we will talk about anything in your financial life. So before we talk about a portfolio construction, Josh and I wanted to bring up a couple books that we think are worth reading. They're very different books, but both really good at getting across what each of them wants to. And the first one is, it's actually, if you have kids or grandkids that you think need some financial literacy, because we know that it's not being taught in the public schools or any schools for that matter. And we know that most adults are financially illiterate. So it always can be helpful if kids can get some exposure to it. The first book is written by a doctor, actually, believe it or not, named John Lim, L-I-M. And the book's called How to Raise Your Child's Financial IQ, The Most Important Things. The reason I bring this up, there's a lot of them out there that are good, but this is only 64 pages long, and it gets into the stuff that they really need to know, like compound interest and how powerful it can be, saving, debt, net worth, budgeting, all those sort of things. So again, if you have kids or grandkids, this is a really good one. Just Google it, How to Raise Your Child's Financial IQ, The Most Important Things by John Lim. It's a really good, and then you can sort of reference it and you can have a conversation about it. I know teenagers aren't real excited about that kind of thing, but just get it for them and maybe they can pick up some of it. Because if you can, if a young person has a sort of basic understanding of this stuff, it has a huge impact on how successful they will be as an adult. And then Josh is reading a book that I read when I was in high school, and it was a really fun book to read because it's a story that seems like it can't be true when in fact it isn't. It is a true story.
And that's The Fall of RJR Nabisco. It's Barbarians at the Gate, and it was written by a couple of Wall Street Journal reporters. It was in the very, it was sort of in the early days of leverage buyouts, which were new at the time, but in the very infancy of private equity and KKR, Henry Kravis, which are now a very large private equity firm. But it was the heyday of corporate raiders in the 80s. Think of Gordon Gekko from Wall Street. And it's sort of a true representation of what was going on as they picked apart a formerly glorious tobacco and food company in the form of RJR Nabisco that merged together and were subsequently destroyed. But it's almost too good to be true. And just the sort of the narrative surrounding how those corporate raiders and corporate management lived back in the 1980s that you can't even contemplate it today. It was just, it's completely off the wall.
I mean, it's like a real life Gordon Gekko's Wall Street, but on steroids, because it's so crazy, the stuff that was going down and the scale at which it was happening back then. It was massive. I mean, the amount of leverage and debt that was happening in today's dollars, it would be almost unfathomable. So it's a great book, Barbarians at the Gate. They're very different books. One is very educational, and the other one is a really interesting, fun story to read, and you won't be able to put it down. Okay, so in this segment, I thought we'd talk about portfolio construction, how to build your portfolio, and you know how to go about doing it, what the important components of it are, what you need to be thinking about. And then for those of you that are in the retirement stage of life where you're having to take income for your portfolio, how you build a portfolio that's set up for retirement in any market condition. So the first thing is when you're figuring out your portfolio construction is to figuring out your tolerance for risk and or volatility. That's a really important thing to know, how much volatility you can deal with and stay invested. And so the best indicator of how you're going to behave in the future is how you've behaved in the past with market volatility. The one thing we know is that we every 5 or 6 years, we're going to have a bear market. And that's something we don't know when it's going to happen. We can't avoid them. So we need to stay invested when those things happen. So how much risk can you put in your portfolio so that it grows over time, but not so much risk that when we get one of those bear markets, you panic. And so let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the riskiest, you've decided you're a 7. That means, let's say, you're going to have 70% of your money in stocks, in risk assets or growth assets, and 30% of your money is going to be in true risk reducers. That's the sort of number you've come to. The important thing to know is if you can't figure out when you're going to put something in your portfolio, if it's either a growth asset or a risk where it's going to add risk and it's going to grow over time, or if it's a risk reducer where it's truly going to protect you on the downside, if you can't figure out which one of those two things it is, it shouldn't be in your portfolio, because there's a lot of securities and asset classes that it's not clear which one of those are. So let's say you're going to build the 70% that is stocks, and you're going to have a certain amount of your money allocated to small cap, US, international, emerging markets, large cap, mid cap, all of those things that are risk assets that are going to grow over time, that are going to be more volatile, that you have to figure out what's going to be there, but it has to be clear that they're a growth asset and you understand how they behave in different environments, interest rate rising, interest rates going down, all those inflation, no inflation, all those sort of things. And then on the risk reducers, and this is the important thing because Josh and I see this all the time, it has to be a true risk reducer. So Josh can talk about all of the people that thought they had risk reducers so far in 2022 that turned out not to be, and what we think of as true risk reducers right now, especially.
Just in recent past, the easiest way to look at something and whether or not it responded the way you wanted it to during turmoil, go back and look at March of 2020 and see what that particular asset did when everything was getting absolutely destroyed. There's very few assets that truly reduced risk in this type of environment. In a recession, almost everything correlates to one. So that's a tough dynamic to get through. The only asset that's actually performed that function that we wanted it to reduce risk this year was short duration treasuries. And corporate bonds haven't performed that function. Traditional risk reducers, the aggregate bond index hasn't performed that function. So much stuff out there doesn't do what you want it to when you need it to do it. And that is actually the question. And if you have questions about that, you can always reach out to us. We're capable of making that determination for you. And that's why we get hired ultimately in a lot of cases.
Yeah. So if it's not clear to you if it's going to be a risk reducer, then it's probably not. So to think about very short, 1 year or less U.S. treasuries historically have always been a risk reducer, and we're pretty clear that they're going to be risk reducers in the future. And so for us, when we look at all of the options available to us with our clients' money, and we say, okay, for our clients that need actual protection on the downside, where can we go other than a money market or cash? And that to us is clear that it's short duration treasuries. The problem for a lot of people out there is they have financial advisors that have a bond portfolio that they think is a risk reducer, and they're not reducing any risk. In a lot of cases, they're taking as much risk as the stock part of the portfolio. I would say if lots of financial advisors put high yield on the bond side of somebody's portfolio, when in fact, a lot of high yield bonds are as risky as stocks in any environment. And so that's the important thing. And then the next stage is for those of you that are taking income, this sort of the fixed income, why it plays even more important of a role in your portfolio is we need, as a financial advisor, a place to go in your portfolio that we can get your monthly income stream that we know is going to be up in value. So take this year, for example. Stocks are down 20%+. And so we don't want to be forced to sell stocks to create your income. And so what we do is we say, okay, the bond part of our client's portfolio is up in value a little bit. And that's where we're going to get the income that our clients need, that they're still going to need because they're still retired. And that allows the stock part of their portfolio, the other 60 or 70%, whatever it might be in that person's case, to recover when the market recovers. So go back to all the bear markets we've had, 2000 through 02, 2008, 2009. We still had clients that are retired. They still needed their monthly income. And we got their monthly income from those true risk reducers so that when the market finally recovered, and it always does, the stock part of their portfolio was able to recover. So you have to then say to yourself, if I'm retired, how many years worth of my income do I want in bonds so that I can Let my stock part of my portfolio recover. You don't go back to the global financial crisis. It was 5 years from market peak back to market peak. That's sort of the rule of thumb that we use in our practice. All right. If you'd like to take us up on a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $500,000 of investable assets, call the office 800-743-0988 or go to our website, Northwest Quadrant Wealth, and send us an email. We'll be back.
Get your free one-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988. Financial Focus Radio Show is online all the time via iTunes, Spotify, and Spreaker. Catch past shows online or by finding us on iTunes.
Our show is back on iTunes, so go on there. And what do you have to search for to get on to find our show?
Financial Focus Radio.
Financial Focus Radio on iTunes, and you can get our show and listen to it wherever life may take you. You can listen to Josh and I on your phone or wherever you, however you listen to iTunes. If you want to sign up for our e-newsletter, Josh and I do a 5 or 6 minute video on the 15th and 30th of every month where we talk about what's going on in the capital markets and how it's affecting your money. So to get added to that list, go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com, and just say add me to your e-newsletter list, and that's the only thing that we will send you. So I'm staring right now intently at a chart of the S&P 500. Going back to 1925, and the chart shows me all of the really bad bear markets. So a bear market is measured by a correction, a stock market decline of 20% or more. That is a bear market. In every single one of these bear markets, there have been rallies. And, you know, the thing to remember that bear markets are not, they don't go down in a straight line. I guess the COVID one went down in a straight line and came back in a straight line.
Fastest retracement of a bear market
but,
in history.
But that was very unique and probably the outlier. Most bear markets, if you go back to the financial crisis, if you go back to the tech telecom media bust of the early 2000s, you know, if you go back to the 70s, you know, most of them have not a straight line down. You know, it takes them a while. You know, the bear market of 2000 through 2002, it was essentially a 2-year sell-off where the market lost about 54% of its value, but it didn't go down a straight line. There were periods in there with 20%+ market rallies.
Three of them, in fact, and multiples continued to contract on the NASDAQ for 9 years after that bubble burst, and not too dissimilar to what we're seeing today as far as a complete change in the interest rate environment.
All right, and then the important thing to remember is that it's time in the market instead of trying to time the market. If you are fully invested in the S&P 500 from 2006 to 2021, that's obviously a 15-year period, you got a 10.66% annualized return. If you miss just the 10 best trading days in that 15-year period, your return goes to less than half. It goes to 5.05. If you miss just the 30 best trading days in a 15-year period, your return goes negative 1.18% return. So it's time in the market rather than trying to time the market, which is the key to success. Just realize the price you pay for the better returns that stocks deliver is volatility. And as long as you can deal with volatility, you can be a successful investor. And most people need to come up with ways to deal with volatility, which leads us in to what we're going to talk about in this segment, which is rules-based investing. And so there's a lot of people that talk about rules-based investing, which is like thematic and smart beta and all this stuff. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about you as an individual creating rules about how you invest your money, where you invest your money. So essentially that you can protect yourself from yourself. And so, Josh, why don't you simply describe what rules-based investing is, and then we can give some examples and talk about why it's so darn important.
Rules-based investing is just, you know, it's the key for us in terms of divorcing ourselves emotionally from decision-making, and which critically damages returns over time if you manage to let your emotions affect your ability to make rational informed decisions, which is very difficult in the midst of corrections. But for us, you know, there's a combination of rules out there. There's basically all rules fall within two categories. There's threshold-based rules. So that could be if you're if any given asset within your portfolio deviates a certain percentage-wise from where you actually want it to be, that's a threshold. And if, say, stock sold off 10%, you would then buy additional stock within your portfolio. That's an example of a threshold-based rule. Or there's time-based temporal rules, which, you know, you say rebalance every 6, 12, 18 months, whatever, you know, period of time you want to preordain as I'm going to rebalance and bring my portfolio weightings back to what I initially wanted them to be. And remember, don't make asset allocation decisions because of what the market is doing necessarily. Make them rooted within your own personal financial situation and your objectives and purpose with your money. We kind of use a combination of time and threshold-based rules to make decisions with regards to rebalancing. A great example is back in December of 2021. We had some threshold-based rules that were triggered that entailed us actively selling stocks and buying fixed income. Rewinding a couple years, we had another threshold-based rule triggered back in March of 2020, where stocks fell 34% in 18 trading days, and our threshold-based rule was triggered, and we had aggressively bought stocks during that sell-off.
So in those examples, so in 2021, stocks had risen so much. So our portfolio that was supposed to be 60% stocks, 40% bonds, the stock allocation because stocks had done so well were 70%. And so we had to be selling stocks, which we sold close to the high, not because we're geniuses, because our rules told us to. And then conversely, when stocks were down and our stock allocations were lower than they should have been, we were buying stocks close to the bottom. It's not because Josh and I are geniuses. Our wives would certainly tell you that. It's because our rules are really good.
And you don't have to overcomplicate it either. I mean, a lot of people out there that are doing it on their own may just want to follow some version of a time-based rule.
But those aren't the only rules. The important thing, yeah. So here's the important thing about rules-based investing. The best investors on the planet all have rules. So Warren Buffett has rules. Jim Simons has rules. All, you know, the guys at Bridgewater, Howard Marks, all of these really legendary investors that have done really well over their lifetime and have unbelievably great track records, they all have rules. Their rules all aren't the same, right? You don't have to have the same. Warren Buffett doesn't have the same rules as Jim Simons. They both have unbelievably great track records doing managing money completely different ways. It's that their rules are sound, and they stick to their rules no matter what the market is doing. And so Josh and I have rules for how we manage our clients' money. It doesn't mean that you have to adopt the same rules. It's that you have to come up with very sound rules about how, you know, let's say you say, I'm going to invest every 2 weeks no matter what the market's doing. I'm not going to let the market, you know, volatility in markets keep me from doing that. I'm going to invest in this asset allocation, even when I think, let's say, developed international is a disaster. If it's part of my rules, I'm going to keep doing it. So your rules have to be your rules. As long as they're sound and you stick to the rules over time, you're going to be a successful investor. The point about the rules is that the most successful investors on the planet all have rules. Now, Warren Buffett probably doesn't have them written down. He just knows what they are. You know, it's like, I'm not going to overpay. I'm all these things that are important. It's that the rules exist. And so for yourself, you have to come up with a bunch of different rules and then write them down and put them in a prominent place that you can't forget. And then when you want to let some emotion overwhelm you and do something stupid, read your rules. And if your rules say you can't do that, don't do that. Because Josh and I are human beings too. We're emotional creatures. We're managing a lot of money for a lot of people. And sometimes Josh and I or we want to do something stupid that doesn't make sense. We go back to our rules. Our rules say you can't do that, and we don't do it. And it protects not only us, but it protects our clients. And so we have made some great investment decisions over the last couple of years, not because we're geniuses or we know what's going to happen, because our rules told us to do so. And that's why rules-based investing is how you can be successful, just like some of the great investors out there on the planet. It helps keep your emotion out of the equation, which for 99% of people, emotion is what gets in their way, including professional investors. All right, if you want to be part of the program, you can always call us 877-670-7117, or you can send us an email by going to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. We appreciate you spending some of your weekend with us. We will be right back.
Sign up for our e-news today. Get the latest thoughts on the market every other week from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management delivered right to your inbox. The short 5 to 6 minute video helps you keep up with the market. You can always watch past videos on YouTube or northwestquadrantwealth.com. The mission is clear. Give honest, transparent analysis and actionable advice every week. Make sure to connect with us on YouTube and get our twice monthly e-newsletter.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on Financial Focus Radio. My name is Tyler Simonis. That guy over there, he is Josh Finelli, and we're partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management here in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We appreciate you spending some of your weekend with us. So, growth investors can be a lazy bunch, and they are historically, when you look at growth investors, especially in times of tremendous froth, like we saw after COVID and we saw in the late 90s, they invest based on a story, right? They're not investing on fundamentals. They're investing on a story, and you know the problem with the story is the story can change dramatically, and they don't care about valuation. All they care about is the story. And often the narrative differs substantially from the underlying business reality. So you think about, the story that a lot of these businesses are telling and the blogs are telling online versus the underlying fundamental of what's actually happening in the business. And, you know, it's really crazy to look throughout history and realize that, you know, so many people have historically mistaken a bull market for genius on their part. When you're evaluating a new and complex technology and business on which they're based as investors, we must be humble. You are not an expert. It's so funny. When Josh and I were talking after COVID to people that were buying these high-flying technology stocks in these prospective client meetings that we were having, they were telling us about they own lots of individual stocks, and we'd say, well, that, you know, over time, that's not necessarily going to work out very well for you. And they were telling us how they were crazy and that they were experts on the technology that these companies, or they didn't even know any of it, but they weren't experts. Of course, they're not experts. They're investing based on a story, and they needed a lot of things to line up perfectly in order for that story to work out. But believing that you have developed some expertise on these whatever you're investing in is a really dangerous thing, and it can also give you this sort of misplaced perception of conviction on knowing that you're going to be right about that investment. So, I would just say, so many of you out there invest based on a story instead of reality and predictability, which over time, the greatest investors, that's how they've achieved success. Not, you know, the story of Tesla becoming the next Amazon. That could happen, but, you know, I just think it's a very dangerous path.
Rivian was going to become the next Tesla, remember?
Yeah.
Well, and the other interesting thing I would note is the rise of the obscure acronym. You know, when in 2021, especially near the end of 2021, all of these acronyms like, you know, revenue per user or
total addressable market. TAM.
Yeah. Annualized recurring run rate, annual recurring revenue, ARR, like the total addressable market, TAM, like Tyler mentioned, all, and you know, the poo-pooing of traditional fundamental valuation metrics sort of reached its crescendo there. And, you know, all of these other acronyms don't matter if you're not making FCF, i.e. free cash flow.
Well, and nobody talked about those terms when they were talking about Procter & Gamble or Johnson & Johnson.
Totally, yeah. Of course, all of a sudden, the fundamentals matter again, and it happens so quickly. And now the regime has totally changed.
All right, let's talk. Let's take some emails. We got an email from Joe M. in Redmond. Joe, you know who you are. Joe says, next year I turn 70 and will file for Social Security. Congratulations, Joe. We think more people should be doing that. I was under the impression that then my 67-year-old wife would be able to collect a spousal benefit, and then 3 years later switch to her own benefit. My financial advisor says I am mistaken. Who is correct? Joe, your financial advisor is correct. It used to be prior to 2015. So there was something called the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015 that changed. Used to be able to file under a spousal benefit and then take that spousal benefit. And then when you got to your full or whatever retirement age you wanted to take it, you could then take yours. Once upon a time that was true to the larger benefit base. But now when you file, that's the one you're stuck with. So if your wife files next year after you've claimed benefits, she applying in the eyes of Social Security program for both the spousal benefit and the benefit based on her earnings history, her payout will be the larger of the two. So, you know, assuming she's going to go in and file and they're going to say, okay, your spousal benefit is X, your earnings based benefit is this. They're going to give her the higher of the two, and she's not going to be able to switch in the future. So if she wants to maximize, Joe, if she wants to maximize hers like you did, she's going to have to wait to 70, assuming that her benefit is based on hers and not on yours. But that's a good question. Joe, it used to be you used to be able to do it the way that that you're describing it. In 2015, they changed all that. All right, we got an email from JB here in Bend. JB says, I will be trying a high deductible health insurance plan and an HSA for the first time. Congratulations. What do we invest the funds in that is productive but liquid enough to allow us to take the money out if needed? I would like to use my savings and defer the HSA money for the future, but you never know what will happen in the present. So JB, that's a good lesson in asset allocation. So real quickly, I'll explain what JB's talking about. A health savings account, HSA for short, can only be set up if you have a high deductible health insurance plan. And, you know, probably most small businesses have high deductible plans, but you have to check. So you have to just call your HR, or maybe you already know, do you have a high deductible health insurance plan? And if you do, you can have an HSA attached to that. And so what you can do is they just increased the rules in 2023. You can contribute $7,750 for a family to your HSA on an annual basis and $3,800 for an individual to your HSA. And most people just put that money in the bank and they spend it when their healthcare costs come up. And if they don't have healthcare costs that they need to spend it on, it rolls over to the next year. The way that I do it is that I contribute the maximum amount. I just contributed the maximum amount last week. And then I invest it in the market exactly the same way I have invested the rest of my retirement assets in the same exact exchange traded funds. I use a company called Lively, which the custodian for Lively is TD Ameritrade. I own the same exact ETFs that I own in my rest of my portfolio. And I don't use any of it. I just pay all my medical expenses out of pocket. And I want my HSA to grow so that when I get to retirement age, I have what I think of as a Roth IRA, because as long as I spend that money out of the HSA for medical related things, including premiums, that money comes out tax-free. So it is the only triple tax benefit plan out there in that you get the tax deduction when you make the contribution. It grows tax-free. When you take it out, it comes out tax-free. It's even better than the Roth. Think about the Roth, but with a deduction on the front end. I don't qualify for the Roth because my income's too high, and so it's my only option. And, you know, I'm going to need money for healthcare expenses. Why not have that there? Now, in your case, JB, what you should be doing is saying, okay, I'm going to invest half of my contribution in a market so I can use it way out in the future. And maybe the rest of it I put into short-term bonds or some
stable value,
Value, something that's very safe so that if you do need to use that money. And JB, over time, what will happen is the part that you invest will keep growing and growing and growing. And the good news is you'll keep having to put money in the sort of safe bucket in case you need it that year. But over time, you'll realize that your portfolio that's been invested is going to be growing quite a bit more, and you'll have this great place you can go access funds when you get to retirement age and take that money out tax-free. So you can pay your Medicare supplement premiums with that money, and it comes out tax-free. You can pay your prescriptions, you know, all the stuff that isn't covered by insurance. And, you know, they say the average person in today's dollars spends about $250,000 to $300,000 in healthcare costs. And so wouldn't that be great if you could take that, have the market do a bunch of the work for you by using HSA? So JB, that's the way I would think about it is, think about it as, you know, you're hopefully going to build up this big pile of money because you're going to invest it. Don't be like most people. 91% of people that have an HSA don't invest the money. Don't be in the 8% or 9% of people that actually invest the money and build a good low-cost asset allocation. And you'll be really surprised when you get to actually needing that money when you're 65. You'll have this big pile of money that will be very advantageous from a tax perspective as well. All right, if you'd like to be part of the show, you have a question or comment, call us 877-670-7117. Or you can always send us an email by going to our website, Northwest Quadrant Wealth. Stick around.
Get your free one-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988. Free retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Call us today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988.
Welcome back. If you want to take one of us up on that free retirement review, we'll give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So call our office here to get it scheduled, or you can send us an email. Go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com, if you have at least $500,000 of investable assets. So Josh did a took a picture, I guess, with your phone and on of your television, and you looked at the returns of the S&P 500 from 1926 to the end of 2022, and the S&P 500 returned 10.2% per year over that period, which is why most people talk about the market returns 10%. Market, the S&P is a pretty good proxy for the market, or the best one that exists at least. And so when you look at the returns at 10.2%, the funny thing is the breakdown of those returns is 39% came
from dividends.
So, you know, the dividend that the companies in the S&P paid, and 61% came from total return, or the price appreciation of the market. And so what's funny about that, so let's just call it 60% price appreciation, 40% dividends, is that, you know, when we do e-news, we talk about when the market's down, one of the benefits is that when your portfolio's dividends are paying, you're buying more shares, that money's getting reinvested, so that inevitably the next bull market starts, you own a bunch more shares. So it sort of supercharges your returns. But, you know, for a long time, these so-called go-go growth investors ignored companies that pay dividends, ignored them at all. And we're not the people that say go and maximize, go buy stocks or companies or investments that maximize the dividend. We're okay with most business, good businesses pay sort of a, what we'd consider a healthy dividend, and they have it well covered. But a lot of people underestimate the return component, the total return component of dividends being reinvested over over time in the total return of the stock market. And I think what it gets really lost is when we get down markets. Our biggest clients, what's funny is, you know, they're good at recognizing that in their because they obviously have a lot of money, and so their portfolios are kicking off tons of dividend income, but that money's getting reinvested. And they know that when the next bull market starts, they have like this supercharge out of the gate because they own so many more shares of their investments.
That came from Bob Pisani's segment that I really enjoy. And he's one of the few commentators on there that I think is more grounded in reality. But he made the exact same point, you know, over when markets are down and you get that compounding feature. It is like unloading a spring when market price, when you ultimately get that price recovery. And it's just such an important thing. And for people out there that live off of dividends, it's actually a more effective strategy to reinvest the dividends on the equity side. And when we're in the midst of a market sell-off, you want to be selling your risk reducers in order to generate your income, not selling stock, because those reinvested dividends drive almost half of your return over time, which is a crazy statistic, but it's true.
All right, we got an email from a Glenn. Glenn says, I recently switched jobs and I realized I have multiple 401k accounts from prior employees over the years that need to be consolidated. When I reached out to my current employer's 401k administrator to understand the rollover process, they said I would actually need to have a paper check mailed to me for each of the prior employers and arrange to mail the checks to them. We were talking about four checks totaling a very substantial amount of money. They said there's no other way to process the rollovers. I can't understand why we're dealing with such an archaic process in this day and age. Should I be worried or should I just go ahead and take care of this now since I don't seem to have much say in the process? So what Glenn is talking about is that – so first of all, Glenn, at least you're doing the right thing by consolidating your 401k accounts that are out there. And I understand that's a lot of people are in that situation. And we are always advocates of consolidating accounts to one place. So assuming, Glenn, you're going to consolidate it to a big custodian like a Schwab or a Fidelity yeah, believe it or not, in a 401k, in most 401ks that exist out there, they don't do a an ACH or custodial to custodial transfer, meaning just wire the money from one custodian to another, like you would if you were going to move from, let's say, Edward Jones to Merrill Lynch. All that money would go electronically, and they're not sending an actual check. But in the 401k world, unfortunately, that's what most 401k providers do. They say, we have to sell everything in your 401k and then mail a check to the custodian where you want that rollover to go. So Glenn, the one thing I'll tell you, and this might make you feel a little bit better, is that you know, they're going to put on the check, it's going to say, you know, FBO for the benefit of Glenn, whatever your last name is, and it should have the you know, the custodian's name on there, and it should have your custodian account number on there. So the only place that money could go is in your IRA at the custodian where you're moving the money to. So if somebody got a hold of that check, there's nothing they could do with it because it's to you and it's to your specific account at the new custodian. But believe it or not, that is the process. And the hard part for us, and the thing that's sort of frustrating, is that, you know, sometimes that rollover and the check being distributed and cut and sent and the mail time, sometimes that can be 30 or 45 days that the money is out of the market and sort of in transition. And, you know, it does interrupt one, the compounding process. There could be some huge up days in that period, or there could be big dividend distributions that would be being paid that you're not invested. And so Josh and I can't figure out why the industry, you know, in 2023, why we haven't gotten to a place where, you know, that can be done electronically. But some of the big plans, that's an option. But the vast majority of them still are sending a check in the mail. It's really crazy. We got an email from an Anton in Redmond. Anton says, hey guys, thanks for doing the show. I learn something almost every week. That makes one of us. My question is about my 401k, another 401k. My company offers both a traditional option and Roth option. How do I know which I should be contributing to?
This is more of an art than a science. Some balance of the two is probably most advisable in a lot of circumstances. There's so many factors that go into this, income, the location of your saving, pre-existing savings. One of the new changes as part of the Secure Act 2.0 that was slid into that omnibus spending bill at the end of 2022 was now your employer match contributions can actually go into the Roth side. So there's just so many factors into this, but
I would say though, if you're most people should be at this point contributing to the Roth, and yes, you have a big tax problem.
I mean, I would certainly want to have the balance of the contributions go into the Roth, but depending on your income, especially those higher
and
income
especially
those higher income individuals out there, you're gonna want to make a balance. But our maybe off the shelf recommendation is 2/3 to the Roth and 1/3 towards traditional.
Anton, let's say you're 30 years old,
then,
all of it
then
should
go to the Roth.
Roth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the younger you are, you're never going to regret dollars in your Roth. And because your income is going to tend to rise over time, maybe that balance will shift exclusively to Roth to include some more traditional contributions as you age and your income presumably is going up. But there's not a perfect answer.
Well, I feel like the argument that was you couldn't get the match is gone now.
So. Yeah, I agree there.
Anyways, all right, that is our show this week. Thank you all very much for joining us. Remember, always buy low, sell high. We'll see you next week.
Been listening to Partners of Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management on the radio show Financial Focus. Remember, you can email or call with your questions anytime during the week. Visit northwestquadrantwealth.com for more information. See you next week on Financial Focus. Any opinions expressed herein are given in good faith and are subject to change without notice and are only correct at the stated date of issue. Past performance is not always indicative of future results. This material is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security or other financial instrument. Securities, financial instruments, or strategies mentioned may not be suitable for all investors. Prices, values, or income from an investment mentioned in this report may fall against the interest of the investor, and the investor may get back less than the amount invested. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as a recommendation of particular securities, financial instruments, or strategies to you. Before acting on any recommendation on this material, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstances, and if necessary, seek professional advice.